D1.
Number 23, B.
In the first time in the Christian Science history, that study was undertaken. Up to that point, everybody just took those seven synonymous terms in a way of sentiment, of feeling what it means, of guessing what it means. Each one just had a feel what mind may mean, what spirit may mean, what soul may mean, but it wasn't a clear, earnest investigation of what mind really means, of what spirit really means. And that investigation was undertaken round about 1938, 50 years after Mrs. Eddy, in one of her last classes which she has given, namely in 1888, was stating that the whole of the science lies in an understanding of the synonymous terms. We have some records of that class, and in that class the notes that the student has taken reads like this. Mrs. Eddy gave the synonymous terms. These terms to a scientist must mean God. Upon the truth of these terms for God rests the basis of the science. In fact, they are the science. When she first commenced teaching, it was impossible for her to give her students these terms and have them in any way comprehended or apply them. See, at that time, 1888, she said, before that date, Mrs. Eddy couldn't give to the students in the classes synonymous terms, nor make them understood, nor make them apply. We can hardly think back to those times and that was possible. But we have seen yesterday how consciousness grows and unfolds and how there are mutations in consciousness, and that suddenly a completely new structure of consciousness seems natural to us, and that has happened in regard to the backbone of science, the synonymous terms. The notes go on and says, she could only talk to them on the lowest plane of healing the sick. That 30 of us nearly all understood them at once showed the wonderful advance Christian Science was making and the universal education through this work. Then she goes on and said about Mrs. Eddy, she said, when the magnitude of the infinite began to dawn on her, she could not see how God could know himself. See, at first she couldn't understand how God could know himself. She too started somehow there where Bicknell Young started, namely with a sense of oneness. But it was an undefinable oneness. And so Mrs. Eddy too at that point couldn't know how God could know himself, but when she saw that he was all and in all, she knew that he knew himself. See, like that statement which we had before, that mind can know nothing beyond himself or herself, but that mind knows itself as mind. And when she saw that, she said at times she would have to wait and could not go further, and then one of the terms for God would come to her and she could go on. And so she knew that every term was given to her through inspiration. This is a note which we find which shows how also to Mrs. Eddy these synonymous terms didn't come just at once and in the first influx of light, but that these terms came to her step by step as she was advancing spiritually. At another occasion, Mrs. Eddy said, "If we were really conscious of the meaning of the synonyms for God, this would heal every case." Then she defined them as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Well, I quoted these two notes from her to show how Mrs. Eddy saw that the answer to everything would lie in the science of the synonymous terms for God, not in the concept alone that God is one and all, that she could see right from the beginning, but then she had to find out the constituents of this one and all. And the first big constituents she found were the seven synonymous terms. And on these terms, she says, rests the science. So here we see why we should give our love and time and energy to a thorough investigation of the textbook in regard to what those synonymous terms really mean. But it is not enough to see the synonymous terms, but the synonymous terms only begin to make sense in the measure as we understand them through the ideas which characterize these terms. And so Mr. Dawley put all his concentration on investigating these synonymous terms in regard to the ideas which express these synonymous terms. Before he could go on and investigate the combination of the synonymous terms as such, first he had to see what are the ideas of each synonymous terms. And you know that today the movement just has somehow to accept that the whole science rests on the understanding of those seven synonymous terms. More and more in the lectures and in articles in the journal and so on, they begin to talk and write about the seven synonymous terms. But they write in a very immature way about it. One just can sense the moment one reads it that they haven't really investigated those seven synonymous terms as a scientist, but much more with a superficial feeling about them. Because the way they write about it is disordered and inexact. Well, this is a statement to which I stand, and every lecturer can challenge me on that. I'm quite willing to take that challenge. Even then, when we have seen that these synonymous terms express themselves as ideas of these synonymous terms, we have only started in understanding reality, the reality of ideas. Then we have to see that these ideas operate really in a calculus and in system. Finally, one has seen why Mrs. Eddy, way back in 1891, has written divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. Either this statement is a statement that is true, or then Mrs. Eddy didn't know what she was writing. If the movement accepts that she knew what she was writing, and not everybody in the movement accepts that anymore, but if we accepted that she knew what she was writing, then we must know that these ideas operate in a system, and that we can fathom reality as a system of ideas. The movement has no answer to what this system is. Mrs. Eddy says that finally thought accepts the divine, infinite calculus. Does the movement know what this divine infinite calculus is? I know of very well-known worldwide teachers and lecturers who have voiced that Mrs. Eddy just didn't know what she was writing when she was writing that. Why? Because a student asked that teacher, what does it mean? And he didn't know, so I have to say Mrs. Eddy didn't know what she was writing. And others feel that God is not the mathematician, and therefore there are no calculations. She doesn't say there are calculations, mathematical calculations. She speaks about the divine, infinite calculus of ideas, not of numbers. So we can see how John Dolly, once he has touched the importance of the seven synonymous terms, that opened the floodgates of reality. That the moment we begin to see what are ideas, we can explain what are illusions. We can see that these ideas, because they are classified concepts, that they operate in a system, and that the operation of this system is a divine infinite calculus, that ideas operate intelligently and orderly and harmoniously. And in this way, the thought opened and opened up to what we now see as the science of ideas. Well, that's what came into focus in regard to the science of ideas. And on the basis of this new vision, naturally rests the new method of treating a case. So I want to speak about the method of treatment that results from this new concept of the science of oneness. What is the basis, therefore, of a Christian Science treatment as we see it now? It goes out from the allness of God good. It sees that evil is nothing. No person, no place, no thing, just an illusion. Just a misinterpretation of the allness of good. But this allness can be understood. It can be understood both in terms of ideas. It's the understanding of ideas in system and science. But it is also an understanding of why evil is nothing. You know how Mrs. Eddy says, you must first find error to be nothing, and then, and only then, do you handle it in science. So, on that basis, we begin to realize that there is only one being. That being is a science of ideas, and that science of ideas is the only reality there is, and that everything which is not of the nature of that reality is illusion, misinterpretation. In that way, we haven't taken into our treatment any belief about the patient and about the case. Because in that oneness of being, we know there is only one thing going on, that's ideas dissolving illusions. This has naturally the great advantage that we go to the bottom of every problem, namely to the mental cause, to that illusion which seems to manifest itself as a discordant condition. So we can see that the new method is not really healing a body the effect of disease, but is really healing the basis, the cause, the root of any disease. The illusion which brought about the discordant condition. But up to now, no one of the preceding methods were ever able to analyze the mental cause. Because all the preceding methods went out from the disease condition. You had a disease condition and you argued against that disease condition. You argued against the negative suggestions and you argued for the truth about that condition. But it left the root of evil out of the whole thing. Even up to the plane of Bicknell Young's method of healing, even that never touched the root of evil. Because even there, you can see that they go out, say, from disease, and because there is only one being, they call it no disease. If there is lack, and because there is just one being, there can't be lack, and so they call it no lack. But that is not really probing the case right down to its initial mental cause. Therefore, we must find that high method which enables us from the point of view of the one mind, the that mind which knows all, which knows but itself, to go out from the divine mind to find out the governing mental cause. And this is divine mind reading. Only when John Dolly showed his method on the basis of this science of oneness, he really could make plain the validity of divine mind reading for treating disease. The divine mind reading came into its right perspective and took its right place in the treatment of a case. Because the divine mind reading is the answer to a material diagnosis. The divine mind reading is the divine diagnosis. Up to this stage, one did always go out from the material diagnosis. You had a cancer and you said, well, it's no cancer. You had lack and you said, it's no lack. But that's not diagnosis, because we know that lack comes from a mortal belief, which doesn't need to be fullness. That cancer comes from a mortal belief which doesn't call itself no cancer, but can come from something very different, from a belief, from an illusion, from a mortal concept which has to be healed. Not lack has to be healed. Not cancer has to be healed. The governing root error, perhaps the predisposing, not only the exciting cause, has to be healed. But who on earth is going to tell us what this hidden, perhaps subconscious, perhaps unconscious root of mortal mind is? Certainly not the case is going to tell us. Certainly not the disease is going to tell us, and certainly not the patient is going to tell us, and certainly not our psychological analysis is going to tell us. It's only the divine mind that is going to tell us. But how can the divine mind reveal the governing error? Can only reveal itself when we know the ideas of mind, of spirit, of soul, of principle, of life, of truth, and of love. Because all these ideas make up reality. And ideas are that which uncover the opposite beliefs. Because ideas are that which deal with beliefs, not with body and matter, with effects, but with the cause, the mental cause. So this is the great step forward which John Dawley brought, that he put forward that great sentence from Mrs. Eddy, where she says, "It is often asked why Christian Science was revealed to me as one intelligence, analyzing, uncovering, and annihilating the false testimony of the physical senses." See, now we have a true intelligence, the divine mind. But that intelligence is analyzing, uncovering, and annihilating the root belief about a situation. Now it is the divine mind that uncovers. Now we draw our conclusions about a situation from the divine mind and no more from the case. And finding from the case to get through reversal, through hinting, or whatever we may use, the right idea. No. Now it's the divine mind alone that reveals, because the divine mind alone is able to pierce through the subconscious, to pierce through the unconscious, to pierce through all those mythological beliefs, the collective beliefs, the hidden beliefs, the subtle beliefs, and just through the penetration of the infinite truth, reach through its nature of truth, by the law of opposite, uncover the opposite claim. It's really like a musician or so that goes to a concert. Well, what is it that enables him to discern a discord in the music? Well, it's his cultured sense of the concord of the music that can discover the discord. Why? Because there is no identity between his inward cultured sense of discord and the objective manifestation of it. And so through the law of soul, of identification, the opposite stands out like a mountain peak. That's what we do in mathematics. That's how we discover errors in mathematics. We don't discover error in mathematics by looking at the error in mathematics. But we discover them by looking into the right calculations of mathematics. And through the law of identification, it is identifying and feeling its identity everywhere until, through the law of opposites, something is standing out as the counterfeit of it. And so, the divine mind can alone analyze a situation. Think of it. Think that whatever the case is, we know the patient is just lying. The case is lying. My psychological knowledge of such cases, which I had before, is lying. My whole experience about such cases is lying. It's lying. It's lying. The only thing that is true is that every time I go back again to the one mind and say, let that one mind reveal itself and tell me the truth about the situation. And because the divine mind never repeats itself, and because being never repeats itself, every case is new. Every case is different. I can't say, well, I had such cases already. Five or ten times I treat it the same way as I used to treat them then. Then we treat it wrongly. We treat it psychologically. We treat it empirically. We treat it in a wrong way. Not from the point of view of the one mind. The mind alone knows mind. And mind alone, through the law of identity, always makes that coincidence of subjective and objective. Until something appears which is not identical. So spirit is so pure that through the law of opposite, it detects the wrong belief and therefore uncovers the wrong belief. So that when the wrong belief stands out, then we know the governing error. Then we know that it is a counterfeit of an idea, and then we can deal with it through our understanding of ideas. And then we deal with the root error of the situation, and not just with the effect of an error. Can we see that the moment we touch this new method, that at that moment we don't use any more science, but that science uses us? That then the science of mind reveals itself to us, to consciousness. Then we are no more in that age where we have to think about it and think about it and make fierce statement about it until we can knock down the opposite error. Then we are just in that state of being receptive, of being quiet within oneself, listen to the one mind, which knows itself out of itself, which knows only itself through itself, not through my thinking, which only knows itself as itself, never as my understanding, but only as mind, and only for the one purpose, to glorify mind. Mind never leaves mind. Mind never knows anything beyond itself, beyond herself or himself, whatever that mind is, an it or a he or a her, never beyond mind. Then mind is doing the job. And the better I let it happen, the more I have within me that sense, all right, let mind do it, the more that mind has power to do it, and the quicker that mind fulfills itself, even in the human. Because mind, capital M, is that which dissolves misinterpretation. And if evil is just misinterpreting the one being, then all that there has to be healed is the misinterpretation of the one mind, the one spirit, the one soul, the one principle, the one life, the one truth, the one love. Then the synonymous terms are the practitioner, the one intelligence analyzing, uncovering, annihilating out of themselves, through themselves, and as themselves, the erroneous condition, so as to bring out the glory of themselves. This method has nothing to do to try to make men men, to try to make men whole, to try to heal men. It's the method of contemplating the Infinite One, including within itself the infinite idea. And in that contemplation, we find the divinity of man, the wholeness of man. And that's healing.